Okay. All right. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to thank again Rav Natta for sharing with us about the essence of tefillah. And we'll talk today a little bit about Turkey. Now, the truth is that in preparing, there were two shilas that I wanted to deal with, but now we're only going to deal with one. So we'll save one maybe for a different year. Already, I was already going to deal with one quicker and one faster, but now we'll just leave one altogether and we'll just deal with the second one. So the first question when you want to talk about Turkey, the real first question is, well, can I eat turkey? That's really the first question. Is turkey allowed to be eaten? So we're not really going to deal with that question so much right now. Maybe next year we'll come back and we'll talk about whether or not you're allowed to eat turkey. Let's assume right now that you are allowed to eat turkey. You can go in the supermarket. You can buy turkey with an OU on it. So let's assume right now that you're allowed to eat turkey. And we'll talk about why that's allowed a different time and why it is that some people don't eat turkey. They exist. There's real from Jews who know what they're talking about who don't eat turkey. There's real from Jews right now who also know what they're talking about and don't drink milk. That's also a different conversation for a different time, right? But whatever it is, you can go into the supermarket and you can buy turkey with a good hechsher. So let's assume right now that you can eat turkey, even though a different time, I'll tell you why maybe some people think that you can. The second question is, assuming that I can eat turkey, am I allowed to eat turkey today? Now, what would make today different than any other day? Let's start slowly, right? If I'm allowed to eat turkey tomorrow, and I was allowed to eat turkey yesterday, so why might I think, even for a second, that I would not be allowed to do it today? Oh, I'm so happy that you said that, Brian. What? Is it what we're up to? In Zvachim? Oh, okay, fine. Because recently we learned about Azarah. We also learned Sanhedrin recently. Right? Good. That's where you find all of the sugyas. What Brett said is exactly right. Right? That we don't follow in the ways of the non-Jews. Now, we have to be very careful about this. What does that mean? I don't follow in the ways of the non-Jews. Let me ask you a question. You're going to walk out of here, right? Everyone's going to leave. Let's say you're walking home. Are you going to walk in the middle of the street or on the side of the street? On the side. The goyim walk on the side. When the non-Jews walk, I see them. Right? Right? When the non-Jews walk, they don't walk in the middle of the street. They walk on the side of the street. So how can you walk on the side of the street? Let me ask you a question. Let's say you're not going to walk. Let's say you're going to drive. Right? You're going to leave here and you're going to drive. Are you going to drive on the right side of the road or on the left side of the road? Right. You're going to drive on the right side of the road? So when the non-Jews drive, they all drive on the right side of the road. So how are you going to drive on the right side of the road? Maybe you should drive on the left side. You have to be different. It'll be the same. Can't walk in the ways of the non-Jews. Well, why don't you drive on the left side of the road? The answer is obvious, right? It's simple. It's dangerous. What are you doing? You walk in the middle of the street, you're going to drive on the left side of the road, maybe in a different country, but this is America, right? You're going to drive on the left side of the road. It's dangerous. What are you doing? Let me ask a different question. Is anybody here not wearing shoes? You should be wearing shoes. You should be wearing shoes. Please, wear shoes. When you come to shul, wear shoes. Also wear socks. Wear socks when you come to shul. It's proper. It's appropriate. Wear socks. Right? Now, I'm not asking if you're wearing socks. I never told you that story about Avidan. I have told you that. When I was in Sha'alvim, Rabbi Avram Avidan, he was the Rosh Yeshiva. And Rabbi Avidan, he's a real throwback. Really, a chevron or a real throwback from a different world. Right? Oh. From a different world. Oh, I tell you, good myself. From a different world, Rabbi Avidan. Really, really, a different world. And I remember him saying, he said it twice. I was there 2 years. I remember him saying it twice. I was there 3 years. I don't remember him saying it the third time. I only remember hearing him say it twice, whatever. So I remember Avidan saying that there were two things he said. He said, if you leave tissues in the Beis Medrash, if you just leave tissues out, dirty tissues, if you just leave them out, in the Beis Medrash. By the way, David told me that Rabbi Wein's yeshiva, so Rabbi Wein used to go around picking up dirty tissues that were on the floor. He said it used to be embarrassing for them. So apparently this is an epidemic, that people leave dirty tissues lying around. I've picked them up in the high school. I picked them up in the shul. I don't know what the problem is. But apparently this is a problem, right? But if you leave dirty tissues in the Beis Medrash, or Rabbi Avidan said, if you come to the Beis Medrash in sandals and no socks, which in Israel is a much bigger thing than it is in America. In America, people do that, but in Israel, if you come into the Beis Medrash in sandals and no socks, he said, Eineni mochel lecha lo leolam hazeh velo leolam haba. I do not forgive you, not in this world and not in the next. He was trying to set, I imagine, a certain code of decorum for the Beis Medrash, right? A certain mode of decorum. So everybody's wearing shoes. Yeah, that's what I'm getting to this. Everybody's wearing shoes. I'll tell you, I went ice skating with Malki last night in the zoo. There's ice skating rink in the Memphis Zoo. And so Malki and I went ice skating last night, and they have a policy over there that you have to wear socks when you wear their skates. If you rent their skates, you have to wear socks. Now, like Jonathan, like you have over there, maybe this is a good idea, because they sell socks. They have a policy, you have to wear socks. So if somebody comes in without socks, so you have to buy a pair of socks. I don't know, there's a sign over there, it's $2 or something like that for a pair of socks. Maybe this is a good idea. Well, we can make some money, David. No? Let's make some crazy rules. No? You come into davening, you have to wear a jacket. Oh, you don't have a jacket? $5, I'll give you a jacket. There's no problem. No, you can't keep it, it's just for one tefillah. So, oh, this is not a bad idea. $5 for a jacket, $5 for a hat. Oh, we can make some money. What?
That's more expensive.
You want to come on Shabbos? You have to wear a tie? Well, now I'm talking business. You want me to shul on Shabbos? You have to wear a tie. You know, you don't have a tie? Okay, $3. I'll lend you a tie. It's not a bad idea. So make you think about this. It's a good marketing tool. All right, in any event. So everyone's wearing shoes, though, right? Everyone's wearing shoes. But why are you wearing shoes?
No.
The non-Jews wear shoes. They all wear shoes.
That's not why
right?
I'm doing it.
They all wear shoes. Right? It's clear. No, you're right. It's clear that even though we have this restriction, like Brett said, not to go in the ways of the non-Jews, it is obvious that does not mean that everything the non-Jews do, you can't do. Right? That's obvious. Is everybody with me? That's obvious. I don't have to give more examples. It's obvious that it's not true that whatever the non-Jews do, I'm not allowed to do. It's not true. It's obvious that it's not true, and it could not be true. Right? They eat. Yeah? So maybe we shouldn't eat. Maybe we shouldn't eat. It's silly. It's obviously not true. George.
It walks like a Vodazor and it talks like a Vodazor.
Oh, maybe. Some big... let's learn a little bit of Torah. Let's learn a little bit. So there's two Gemaras. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Nun Beis, and there's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Yud Aleph. Two Gemaras. And they each ask the same question. The problem is that they don't give the same answer. So there's two Gemaras. And the Gemara asks the following question. The Gemara says, Sorfin al ha-malachim v'lo midarke ha-emori. That means that they used to have a custom. When the king used to die, they used to get rid of all of his stuff. They used to burn it. If it was an animal, they used to maim it. Whatever they used to do. Right? They used to do all sorts of things. And Tosus over there asks about Sar Balei Chaim, and I don't want to talk about that right now. I only want to talk about Darkei Emori. I only want to talk about the ways of the non-Jews. So let's say the king had a bed. Or let's say the king had a desk. Well, the president has a fancy desk, doesn't he? In the Oval Office, doesn't he have a fancy desk? Something, some foreign dignitary gave it. I should really know this. It's a little bit embarrassing. But no, does anybody know? If nobody here knows, then I don't feel bad anymore. But I feel like this is something that Americans know.
Yes.
Yeah? Yeah, so who gave it?
I think it was
about... Oh, yes, he has a fancy desk. Okay, that I know too. Okay, that I know also. Okay, good.
President Kennedy had it modified so that his little son could be underneath the desk and nobody would see, so he put a panel in the front of the desk.
Really?
Yes.
I feel like that's something from National Treasure. What's that Disney movie where they take a desk apart or something like that? Is that really true?
Yes.
He hit a kid in the desk?
His son would hang out with him.
I should do that here. That's a great idea. Get a little panel in the desk. My kids wouldn't be that quiet. All right, what can you do? All right, good. So the president has a fancy desk, whatever it is, right? The president. So when the king died, they used to get rid of all of his stuff. They used to burn it. The president has a fancy desk, right? So now we have a new president. The old president is gone. Oh, no, sir. It's pasnish, the new president should use the old president's desk. The old president, a little respect for the old president. Give his stuff to the new guy. No! Don't wait for some president down the line to take the bust and send it back. Right? Don't wait for that to happen. No, nobody? Okay, fine. What are you going to do? Don't wait for that to happen. Let's get rid of it right now. Get rid of it right now. So, sorfin al ha-malachim, they used to burn the king's stuff. Ve'eino midarkei ha-emori. And it's not chukas ha'akum. Now the non-Jews used to do that also. And so the Gemara said, hang on a second. If the non-Jews did that, so how is it that we do that? It's following in their ways. How is it that we do that? That's what the Gemara asks. Sorfen al malachim v'lo midarchei amori. How do we do it? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin gives a very interesting answer. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, no. If you look in the Tanakh, you see we did it first. Oh, It's not going in the ways of the non-Jews because they're copying us. We're not copying them. They're copying us. We did it first. Here you go. You open up the Tanakh. You learn a little bit. You see that the custom was they used to burn things when the kings used to die. So the non-Jews picked up and they said, oh, Bit Chachamim, look at these Jews. They created something called Palm Sunday and they decided that they were going to bring Lulavim into the churches. So nobody comes and says that you can't bring a Lulav anymore on Sukkot. It's not exactly why I sort of misrepresented why we still bring the lulav on Sukkot, but it's a good example. Right? Because we did it first. We did it first. This is what our Sanhedrin says. Sorfan al-Malach milomidarki amori, because we did it first. They're copying us, we're not copying them. That's what Gemara says in Sanhedrin. The problem is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, and the Yud Aleph asks the same question. The non-Jews, they burn the stuff, so how could it be that we burn the stuff? It's the same question. And the Gemara over there answers something very, very different. The Gemara over there answers that the reason why they burn the stuff of the king is Mishum Chashivusa. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, they don't burn the stuff for anything to do with their religion. They don't burn the stuff for anything to do with Avodah Zarah. They burn the stuff Mishum Chashivusa, prominence of the king, to give cover to the king. No one else should use the king's stuff. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that it's not a chok, to use the terminology. It's not a decree, something that they do that we don't understand and it makes no sense and we don't know why they're doing it. We know why they're doing it. They're doing it because of kavod. They're doing it because of kavod? To give honor to the king? Okay. It's not a problem. Not a problem. It's okay. Mishum chashivusa. That's why they're doing it. We have difficulty. We have two Gemaras. They both ask the same question, and they both give different answers.
Why couldn't they have, so, the same, why couldn't they have it in one Gemara, the same question? Why don't they need to have two Gemaras to cover that same issue?
Brett.
Any reason?
If only. If only you had organized the Gemara. Our lives would be so much simpler. It's a problem. It's a problem in learning in general, is that things are all over the place, and not as organized as perhaps we would have liked it to have been if it was all done by Excel sheets and things like that. You know, you got to understand that the Gemara started in a very interesting fashion, right? And none of this stuff was all written down. This was all, you know, passed down from Rebbe to Talmud, from Rebbe to Talmud over thousands and thousands of years. Until finally, you know, Ravina and Rav Ashi are given the credit for redacting the Gemara until they, you know, compiled all of thousands of years of information. You know what I mean? It's a pele, you know, to me. It's a wonder how the Rambam did what the Rambam did. I'm saying the Rambam went through not only all of the Talmud, but all of the Midrashim, and he took each halacha and he organized them by topic. The Gemara is not like that. Right? Well, we're talking about a Gemara, like you said, a Gemara in Sanhedrin, a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Well, how come it's not in the same, you know? The Rambam went through and he organized by topic from all of these sources. You know, the Rambam himself sometimes got lost. You know, the Rambam didn't have Excel, the Rambam, when he was putting together all of these, you know, the Mishnah Torah. He didn't work like that. And he didn't have something like that to help him. He didn't have certainly not an Android and not even an iPhone. You know, he didn't have anything like that. And so when the Rambam was putting it together, he was doing it by memory. We have a letter from the Rambam where somebody asks the Rambam didn't quote his sources on purpose. On purpose. The Rambam didn't tell you where he got the halachas from. He did it on purpose. It's a different conversation for a different time why he didn't do that. Generally speaking, we assume that good research always has footnotes, right? But the Rambam didn't do that on purpose. Oh, we're not going to talk about that right now. But somebody asked the Rambam, where'd you get this halacha from? We have a letter from the Rambam. Somebody asked the Rambam, where'd you get this halacha from? And the Rambam responded, he said, I don't remember. And then the Rambam writes, oh, but now I remember, you see, because the halacha, this particular halacha, it wasn't where you would have expected to have found it. And I remember it was a medrash that was somewhere else. We're talking about something entirely different. And it had this little thing about this. And the Rambam forgot. He forgot where he got the halacha from. He remembered and he put it back in. But it's a complicated part of learning in general. So here we have two Gemaras, one in Sanhedrin and one in Avodah Zarah. And they both say different things. And so how do we reconcile the two Gemaras? This is a big problem. How do we know what's okay and what's not okay? You see, if we take the Gemara in Sanhedrin, then it's okay if we did it first. If we didn't do it first, you're in a lot of trouble, right? If I look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, so I have to figure out why is it that they're doing it, depending on why it is that they're doing it, so now I can talk. It's a big difference between those two Gemaras. So Tosis, both in, yeah, Carl.
During the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim, in the dress that they wore,
yep.
Once they wore the dress, they didn't burn it.
Right.
They put it away and hid it.
That's correct.
That giving cover to the Kohanim, much like you were talking with...
To the Kohanim or to the Avoda? Both are possible. Both are possible. Both are possible. See, I thought you were going to ask me a different Shiloh. I thought you were going to ask me about the Big Day Kahuna. How did we get the designs for the Big Day Kahuna? No? Torah didn't say. Torah uses materials, not designs. How'd they design the Big Day Kahuna? Anybody know? If you look at the Rishonim over there, if you look in Ramban and look in the Achronim, look in Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch's interpretation on the Chumash, right, you'll see the Rishonim over there, right, that they took the styles from the monarchs of the times. Yeah, really, that's what the Kohen Gadol wore. The Kohen Gadol wore what the monarchs, Paro Melech Mitzrayim, and that's what the Kohen Gadol put on. Yeah, that's right. Ooh, it's wild, but yeah. I thought that's what you were going to ask me. Okay, good, I don't have to worry about that now. So Tosis in Sanhedrin and Tosis in Avodah Zarah, right, Tosis gives the same answer. Tosis says the following. Tosis says, there are two different types of issues. There are two different chukas akum, Tosis says. Two different problems in following in the paths of the non-Jews. The first problem, Tosis says, is if they're doing it because of Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to do it. Anything that the non-Jews do because of Avodah Zarah is not allowed. That's what Tosis says. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah asks, how come we burn if the non-Jews burn? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, it's not Avodah Zarah. They're just doing it for honor. They're not doing it for Avodah Zarah. But that Tosis says is a second problem. A second problem, Tosis says. The second problem is that anything that the non-Jews do as a minhog shtus, they do it. Why do they do it? Well, they have no reason. That's what they do. There's no reason why they do it. There's no reason why they do it, but that's what they do. So anything that they do for no reason whatsoever, Tosis says, that's also a problem. And so the Gemara in Sanhedrin asks, well, why do they burn stuff to give cover to the king? What do they burn stuff to give cover to? What do they have to burn stuff? See, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah asks, is it Avodah Zarah? And the Gemara says, no, it's not Avodah Zarah. Oh, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, according to Tosis, picks up where the Gemara in Avodah Zarah left off. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, okay, so it's not Avodah Zarah, but what are they doing it for? What's the reason? It's a minhag shtus. There's no reason for it. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, okay, there's no reason for it, but we did it first. So it's okay, because we did it first. Comes out according to Tosis' opinion, if there's something that the non-Jews do, not for Avodah Zarah, but also for no particular good reason, that's what they do. No particular good reason. Are you allowed to do that? No. According to Tosis, you're not allowed to do that. So the Vilna Gaon paskins like Tosis. And that's why a lot of people who claim to hold of the minhag of the Gaon, they don't wear neckties. What do I wear a necktie for? What do I wear a necktie? Is it because of Avodah Zarah?
No.
Was the first person to wear a necktie Jewish?
No.
Probably also no. So what do you wear, a necktie? Oh no, it's a style.
I mean, it's the same exact thing as wearing black and white.
Oh, easy. One second. Slow. It's style. Wear a necktie. It's a style.
Well, it's also a Victorian. It has a cut off from the body and the mind to separate.
Oh yeah, is that right? Okay, good. You made that up. Good. So if it's just a style. So the Gaon says if there's no particular reason, you can't do it. So all those people here who think that this shul holds of the Minhag HaGaon, right, that's why they don't come with ties on Shabbos. That's why. I got it now. I never see those guys in ties during the week either. I hope. Right? But the minhag of the Gaon is that you have to be machmir. I think that this is I think that there's people who are machmir like this Gaon, and that's why they do all sorts of things. That's why I think the Chassidim, this is just what I've heard. I never asked anybody, I never did real research. But I think that the Chassidim, they button their clothing the opposite way. Right? It's because, listen, my buttons are on the right side. So we have some ladies here. I imagine your buttons are on the left, right? That's how clothing works. What? What? A kittel is like that. Yeah, why is that? I don't know why that is. It's probably because the Hasidim make kittels. That's probably why it is. I don't know. Right? I'm not sure. Right? But they do the opposite because why are my buttons on the right? There's no reason.
That's
a problem. Well, so that's a good shayla. That's a good. That should be worse. I mean, maybe that should be worse. I don't know. It's a good shayla. Okay. But why are my buttons on the right? Oh, the buttons are on the right because I don't know. That's the style. That's how it is. Oh, so if there's something that the non-Jews do and it's no particular reason, listen. How come I don't walk in the middle of the street? No, because it's dangerous to walk in the middle of the street, right? It's not because there's no particular reason. It's not because there's no rationale to it. It's not a chok akum, right? It's not that it's no reason, right? So the buttons are on this. So the Gaon says, Tosis would say, so you can't do that. You can't do that, right? That's the opinion of Tosis. And the Vilna Gaon Paskin's like Tosis. And if you accept that approach, as there are those who do, then this is a very wide-reaching halacha. This is a very wide-reaching halacha to all sorts of different areas of life. Now, we'll get to Thanksgiving in a second. I'm really not there yet. We need to learn some of the other Rishonim, but let's just tip our hand a little bit, right? If we were to accept the reasoning of Tosis and the Gaon, so why do we have Thanksgiving? See, so I didn't want to correct Rav Nata when he was here. I didn't want to. It's not nice. I learned in grade school also that we had Thanksgiving because of the pilgrims and I don't know whatever who else was there, and they had turkey and Indians and very nice, and my kids in the Hebrew Academy, so they're also learning the same Narish, and they came home with these little crowns with feathers on them, and it's very cute and it's very, very nice and it's lovely, right? So why did they make that feast? Because why'd they make the feast? Why? What? Because it was a harsh winter. This is what I learned when I was in grade school. It was a harsh winter, and they made it out. And at the end of the winter, everyone was so happy that they made it out. So they made a big feast. So, of course, they made that feast in November, right? What? That doesn't make any sense, right? Oh, yeah, that's not why we have Thanksgiving. That's not why we have Thanksgiving. I think on the front end, I think Rabbi Michael Broy did a lot of research on these topics, and he has an article that you can get online, about Thanksgiving and about Halloween and about a whole bunch of different holidays and all sorts of stuff. I'll just use his research from the American sources because it's helpful for us to understand that in 1789, year after the Pilgrims. In 1789, right, George Washington recommended to Congress the following. George Washington recommended to Congress that a day of public thanksgiving and prayer be observed in acknowledging with grateful hearts the favors of the Almighty God by affording them an opportunity to establish a constitution of government for safety and happiness. 1789. George Washington. I'll read you a little bit. November 26, 1789, George Washington pleaded for Congress to create the Thanksgiving holiday. George Washington said the following: "Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be." It was very eloquent, George Washington, no? "That we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation. What? For the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish the constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the nation, the national one now lately instituted, for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general for all the great and various favors which he has been, he, capital H, which he has been pleased to confer upon us. George Washington asking the Congress to create a national holiday of Thanksgiving in November of 1789. Now, given all that we know about Thanksgiving, and now we know a little bit more than we knew beforehand, right? What would Tosfos and the Gaon say about Thanksgiving? Is it a question? First, let's answer this question. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, Jerry.
And I'm not sure which one wasn't
following,
but they did get it from us.
Who got it from us?
The Christians.
They did?
Right, we did it before.
Oh, we did it first. We did it first. We did it first. That, according to Tosfos, that helps you if? If it's not Avodah Zarah. Now, is this Avodah Zarah?
No,
he never said that. This is a good argument. Rabbi J. David Bleich makes this argument. That even if you accept that this is religious, it's still not Avodah Zarah. That's a much more difficult argument to make. I'm telling you, you find it. You find it. But once you accept, if you accept, that this is a religious holiday, then that argument gets much more difficult to make. Much more difficult to make. George.
Because he says they're talking about Hashem. They're not talking, they're only talking about the Almighty.
Maybe. Jonathan?
Well, for saying it's not them, you're right back into the Palm Sunday problem.
It's a big problem. Yes and no. It's exactly the same. But okay, fair enough. You know what the thing is though? Let's be fully honest with everybody. Right?
This wasn't established Christian wise. It's clear because this was established as an American holiday.
I'll even tell you something else. Wait one second. I'll tell you something even better. Because Washington made this beautiful speech in 1789, and do you know what happened? Congress voted against it. They voted against it. And in 1789, the Congress did not establish a holiday of Thanksgiving, despite George Washington's religious eloquence. It wasn't, what did you say, Shimon? It sounded right. Oh, it was not until 1846. In 1846, Abraham Lincoln established Thanksgiving as a national holiday. Now, what was going on in America in 1846 that caused Abraham Lincoln to attempt to establish yet another national holiday, which he called Thanksgiving? You can say it. It's okay. You can say it. What? They needed new jobs. The War of Northern Aggression. Of course. Right? Abraham Lincoln saw the country falling apart. Abraham Lincoln saw the country falling apart after the Missouri Compromise, problems of slavery. I know, not yet. Right? I just wanted to say that. Right? Abraham Lincoln saw the country falling apart. And so Abraham Lincoln tried to make this, or he did, he was successful in creating this new holiday, a day of togetherness for Americans that he called Thanksgiving. Now let's revisit again. According to the opinions of Tosfos and the Gaon, Thanksgiving okay, not okay? Let's revisit.
Yeah.
What?
It depends.
It depends. Let's say now it's not religious. It's not Avodah Zarah. That's good. Let's take it away from that. But what's... Is it shtus? Oh, that's a shiloh. Oh, good. Say. Go ahead. Why? Well, what's the reason? Why is it different than me wearing a necktie? That's what I'm saying. You hear what I'm saying? I'm wearing a necktie. You see I'm wearing it, right? Okay, but why is it different? In other words, why would those who maintain, right, the Gaon, that the opinion of Tosfos is that would be considered a minhag shtus, why would this be any different? I'm ready. No?
Because
I'm being serious. What?
That's
why? That's what I'm asking. Why?
It's
because it had a purpose.
Yeah,
because
that's
oh.
Okay,
good, 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 good. Okay, good.
First of all, 1621, when it was declared a national holiday, it was by the governor at the time. It happened to be before 1776. They reintroduced it, but the fact is it was done over there on the rock. On the rock,
you know, oh, you know, there may have been a meal that they had. It was in November? Find that very hard to believe. It might be, but I find it hard to believe. What? Oh, it's like Sukkot. Oh, very good. Oh, it could be. This is the research that I have here. What?
Canadian Thanksgiving is Sukkot time. The second Monday in October.
Yeah. What's Canadian Thanksgiving? I don't even know what that is. I have a hard enough time with American holidays. You what? Is that like Boxing Day or something? What? What? Oh, for the harvest that I have. That kind of Thanksgiving. Okay, good. Maybe. Very good. That makes more problems for us, not less problems. Okay. Very good. We're making more problems. That's okay. We can make more problems. I'm all right with that. Yes, Carl.
What about
autumn. Oh, good, good. Yeah, Carl. Yeah, right. Just like Sukkot. Could be, Carl. I don't know. All right, good. I believe you. I don't know. So that's Tosus' approach. Let's move to the Ran's approach. The Ran is a different approach. Remember our main problem, right? I have two Gemaras. One says that the reason why it's okay is because it's Mishum Chashivusa. They're not doing it for Avodah Zarah, they're doing it for cover. The other Gemara in Sanhedrin says, no, the reason why it's okay is because we did it first. Two Gemaras. That's why Tosas said that you have to jump two hurdles in order for something to be okay. Right? First you have to get past the Avodah Zarah hurdle. Once you get past the Avodah Zarah hurdle, now you have to get past the Minhag Shtus hurdle. Right? Tosas says it was two problems. The Ran didn't understand that way. The Ran understood that these two Gemaras are really the same. And when they say two very different... What?
We've had pseudos
Yeah, well, some people here are trying to suggest that we had it first also. We had it first too. Okay, good. Could be. Now, right? So according to the Ran said that these two Gemaras are really the same. They sound very different. One Gemara says because of Kava. The other Gemara says because we did it first. The Ran says no. There's an underlying principle that the Gemara is teaching us. The underlying principle is that whenever something is done, and it's not for Avodah Zarah, then you're okay. This is what the Ran says, an underlying principle. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that the reason why they're doing it is because of Kavod, not for Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says the reason why we can do it is because we did it first. The Ran interprets what that means is that it's not a practice of Avodah Zarah. Because look, we have it first in the Torah, and therefore there must have been some other reason. When they did it in the Tanakh, they weren't doing it because of Avodah Zarah. There must have been some other alternative reason that they were doing it, and therefore the Ran believes that it's okay. The Ran thinks that the two Gemaras, even though they say seemingly different things, are really saying the same thing. That's the opinion of the Ran. Now, if you accept the opinion of the Ran...
The Ran still says you need a reason. You do need a reason.
Oh, but why? This is very important.
This is very important. He still says that it's a stu-
why?
Because we're afraid that maybe it has to
so be... Good. So what Avi said is right, is that the Ran would agree that if they have a custom that I don't understand, and I don't know where this came from, what are they doing this for? Why are they doing it? That doesn't make any sense. Why? I don't understand. So the Ran would say you can't do it, but why is different than Tosus. Tosus would say you're not allowed to do that because it's a minok shtus and it's chukas akum. The Ran would say you're not allowed to do that because it might be a bodhisattva. Because it might be a Avodah Zarah. I'll give you an example. I was joking with Rav Nata about the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam and the Ravid have an argument by Chukas Akum, right? The Gemara says that you're not allowed to cut your hair in a mohawk. It's not allowed. So besides the fact that it's ugly, I'm saying it's not allowed. The Gemara says it's not allowed because of Chukas Akum. Chukas Akum. So what's wrong with the mohawk? What's wrong with it? So there's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. What the problem is. Everybody ready? The Ravid says that the problem is that that's how they used to cut it when they did their service and their worship. It was a form of haircutting specific to the Avodah Zarah. That's what the Ravid says. But that's not what the Rambam writes. The Rambam writes, are you ready for this? Shehu derech hagoyim shemekastim es atzman liznus kidei sheyitnu anoshim einehem bohem. It was a fancy style. You used to wear your hair in a mohawk and you used to get attention from the ladies. That's what the Rambam says. So it's not allowed. You see, there's a big difference between the Rambam and the Ravid. The Ravid assumes that if it's not allowed because of Chukas Akam, it's because of problems of Avodah Zarah. The Rambam is willing to assume that there's a greater problem of Chukas Akam, much like my necktie. Style. It's fancy. Is there a reason? Rationale? No? Not allowed. The Ravid presumably limits it more to the area of Avodah Zarah. So the machlokes between Tosfos and the Ran may very well also be a machlokes between Rambam and Ravid. So now I already told you that the Gon paskins like Tosfos, maybe like the Rambam too, right? But the Ramah, who the Gon is commenting on, paskins like the Ran. The Ramah is a mekil. This is good for us, guys. The Ramah is a mekil, right? The Ramah says, if it's not Avodah Zarah, then you're okay. Now, again, like Avi said, let's be clear. If I don't know what it is, I have problems. But if I know what it is, and I know it's not Avodah Zarah, then you're okay. Only one hurdle clear. The hurdle is Avodah Zarah. And if I know what it is, and I know it's not Avodah Zarah, so then you're okay. Now again, if you have something that has no reason and no rationale, I have to be nervous that it might really be Avodah Zarah. But if it has a reason, it has a rationale, the Ramah's example is the following. The Ramah quotes from the Maharik. The Maharik got the following shaila. Are doctors allowed to wear white coats? Why does a doctor wear a white coat? So that's what the Maharik said. The Maharik said doctors are allowed to wear white coats. Why? Because he said it's not a minhag shtus. It's not for no reason. You know, listen, you got to know who the doctor is. You're walking in the hospital, and how do you know? Listen, who's a first year med student, and who's a second year med student, and who's a third year med student? They all wear different colors, don't they?
They all wear white coats.
They all wear white coats. Is that right? Really? So maybe that's what. Is that right? Yeah.
On Shabbos they wear long coats.
Whatever it is, all right. You got to know who the doctor is. So the Maharik says you have to know who the doctor is. So the doctor's allowed to wear a white coat. That's what the Maharik says. So the Ramah quotes in the Maharik. The Ramah says whenever you have a reason, whenever you have a rationale, a purpose for why you're doing something, you know what the reason and the rationale is, and it's not because of Avodah Zarah. So now you're okay. So now le'inyonenu. So now let's talk about Thanksgiving. Let's assume that we paskin like the Ramah. It could be that people are machmir like the Gon. Could be. There's people who are machmir like the Vilna Gon. And if people are machmir like the Vilna Gon, so there might be reason. There might be reason to say that Thanksgiving is a minhag shtus. You could argue, but it's not crazy. To say that Thanksgiving is a minhag shtus, there's no real reason to have Thanksgiving. You could argue, but it's not crazy. And there might be reason not to do it. But let's assume that we paskin like the Ramah, and not like the Gon. I've seen a lot of people here wearing ties. Yeah, I've seen most of you wearing ties at one point or another, right? Which tells me that we don't paskin like the Gon. Or at least it tells me that you don't paskin like the Gon, right? I'm wearing one right now, which tells you that I don't paskin like the Gon. So assuming we paskin like the Ramah. So what's the story with Thanksgiving? So you have in the Achronim a number of different tshuvas that are difficult to maneuver. Rav Moshe Feinstein has four tshuvas about Thanksgiving, spanning 50 years time. He has a tshuva from Thanksgiving he wrote in the 50s. He has a tshuva from Thanksgiving 40 years, whatever, that he wrote in the 90s. Four tshuvas about Thanksgiving, and they all say different things. Some of them are similar. They all say different things. In one tshuva, Rav Moshe says, a baal nefesh should be machmir. In one tshuva, Rav Moshe says that even if it might be okay, somebody who wants to be scrupulous, he should be machmir. In a different tshuva, Rav Moshe says that there's no problem at all, except Rav Moshe is nervous. He says there's a different problem, not chukas akum. There's another problem. We're not allowed to add dates to the calendar. Not allowed to add new holidays to the calendar. So Moshe was nervous. If you have a Thanksgiving every single year, so then you're adding a new date to the calendar. So it's not Chukas Akum. It's an entirely different problem. So Rabbi Henkin and the Shuvas B'nai Bonim. So Rabbi Henkin takes this line of reasoning, and Rabbi Henkin says, if that's the problem, then you have to be careful in Thanksgiving. You can't. If you have a Thanksgiving meal, you can't have a what's the word I'm looking for? Song or poetry reading or what's the word I'm looking for? There's you can't have like a ceremony, because that's like adding a new day. But if you just have a meal, so you have a meal. Oh, it's a big shaila about Yom Ha'atzmaut. It's not a simple shaila. It's a big shaila. It's a big shaila. Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom HaShoah. It's a big shaila. Whether we can add those, it's a big shaila. It's a good shaila. It's not our topic today. It's a good shaila. One second. So Rabbi Henkin also suggests that you skip a year. Skip a year. He didn't say how often. He says skip a year. Are you nervous about having a new day on the calendar? So Moshe says new day on the calendar. So skip a year. He didn't say how often you have to skip a year. He says okay, skip a year. Yeah.
What calendar was Moshe using? He was using a luach. Thanksgiving doesn't appear on the luach. If he's using a particular calendar,
I don't think he was talking about the actual calendar. I don't think he was talking about a print calendar, and the problem is to add a day on. You know, like my family, we're having a birthday party for my grandmother. She should live and she should be well in January, and it's her 87th birthday, and so my whole family is going, and Malki's making a calendar for the family, and she's putting on the calendar. You know, you can do all these cool things online now, pictures, and so on everybody's anniversary and everybody's birthday in the family, thank God, from my grandmother. If my grandmother is one, just starting from my grandmother, she's one, right? We're now over 60, right? From my grandmother, just our family, we'll all be together. I think we're close to 70. I don't remember exactly how many we are. So between birthdays and anniversaries and all that business, we're putting a lot of days on the calendar, right? We're putting a lot of days. I don't think that's the problem. I think that what he meant is to establish a new day as a holiday. It doesn't have to be a print calendar. It doesn't matter. It's that if this is every year, this is Thanksgiving is a holiday, and we celebrate Thanksgiving every single year on it. So Moshe was nervous adding the new day in the calendar. So he's nervous. I said, there's four tshuvas. What do you want? I'll give you a different one. I'll tell you another one. So Moshe has a whole bunch of different shuvas, and it's difficult to maneuver them. It really is. It's difficult to maneuver the shuvas. So somebody asked him, and this is the one he printed in the 90s. Moshe the Tshuva, it's the last volume of Igros Moshe. Somebody asked him, he said, well, I was reading this volume of Igros Moshe, and it says this about Thanksgiving, and I was reading this volume of Igros Moshe, and it says this about Thanksgiving. He asked Moshe, a stira in Moshe. Oh, thus is a shaila. Right? So Rav Moshe answers, even in the last one, I was thinking this, and then I was thinking this, and that's what the last one looks like, too.
But he says in the last one,
he says that he's notet to be machmir. Right. So you have one tshuva in Rav Moshe, he says to be machmir. Another tshuva in Rav Moshe says to be mekil. Or the last tshuva in Rav Moshe, there's a third one, too. The fourth tshuva in Rav Moshe, he says that he's still not sure, but obvious, right? Rav Moshe says that he's notet, he's leaning towards the tshuva that says you should be machmir. Oh, that's what Moshe says. Yeah.
It's interesting that in the conclusion of the Chayei Adam Sefer, you find the establishment of private family holidays
right. For
a nest that happened to them.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a part of it. You're right. This is a part of it. And this is a part of the conversation I'm not going to talk about right now. This is allowed. It is allowed. It's allowed. We're not going to talk about it right now. But it's a good point. So that's Rav Moshe. It's a little bit confusing. Rav Moshe writes, even in the tshuvas where he's leaning to be mekir, Rav Moshe writes that a bal nefesh could be that he should be machmir. It could be that Rav Moshe was saying he should be machmir like the Vilna Gaon. It's possible. I don't know. That's Rav Moshe. Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Shechter writes in the Nefesh HaRav that Rabbi Soloveitchik used to have Thanksgiving every year. So Rabbi Shechter writes in the Nefesh HaRav that Soloveitchik used to do it. I don't know what he ate. I don't know if he ate turkey. I don't know. But he used to have it every year. That's what Rav Shechter writes in the Nevesh HaRav. He does not say, I don't think he says he ate turkey. I think he says that you can eat turkey. He doesn't say Rav Soloveitchik ate turkey. But Rav Shechter writes in the Nevesh HaRav, Rav Soloveitchik used to have Thanksgiving. And it's probably in line with the Psak of the Ramah. The Psak of the Ramah is that if you know the rationale and the reasoning behind it, and it's not because of Avodah Zarah, so then you're okay. And since Thanksgiving was not established by George Washington, most probably we would be okay. And that's probably where Rabbi Soloveitchik was coming from. They say from Rav Huttner, I do not believe this is printed anywhere, I think there is a tshuva from Rav Huttner that they claim is talking about Thanksgiving, but doesn't say Thanksgiving anywhere in the tshuva. So they say from Rav Huttner, that Rav Huttner thought that it was really, really chukasaka. It was really, really chukasakam. Either because Rav Huttner thought it was a religious holiday, or because Rav Huttner thought that we always have to paskin like the Vilna Gaon. I don't know which one it is.
I think he says in the Gazook 7, he says because anything that's based on the Christian calendar automatically is considered Avodah Zarah.
Okay, good. So that would make it because it's a religious holiday, and that would make it like it's because of Avodah Zarah, and therefore even the Psak of the Ramah, Rav Huttner thought that it was that was not allowed. Hayotze lanu mikol zeh. Yeah. Oh, he would say it's not allowed to, right? Memorial Day, not allowed to. No. Memorial Day, also not allowed. Labor Day, also not allowed. Right, that's right. Okay,
cool. We have to go to work.
Good, right, good, okay. No, you have to go to work. You have to, of course. You can't take off. Rav Moshe says, yeah, no, you have to go to work, and you have to wear a tie and the whole thing. Right? No, yeah. Rav Moshe has a thing, by the way, about taking vacation during the... Rav Moshe wouldn't like it. I'm just saying. Oh. I'm just saying, Rav Moshe wouldn't like it. That's all I'm saying.
You can come to work.
I was saying, well, you think they're giving me off over here? What I'm saying, you know? Listen. Yeah, Carl.
You know, in Jewish calendar, every day is a day of Thanksgiving. This just fits the 365...
All right, it could be. Hayotzei lanu mikol zeh. Well, what comes out from all of this is that there are people who are machmir... and that there are people who are mekel. You want to have a Thanksgiving dinner? Have a Thanksgiving dinner. You want to eat a turkey? Have a turkey. I happen to like turkey. I think it's very delicious. I know, not really, okay. Some people don't like it. I was talking to one of my friends, he's a rabbi in Chicago. He has a shul, so he's also saying a shiur this week about Thanksgiving. Everybody, rabbi in the world is saying a shiur about Thanksgiving right now. Or maybe at least every rabbi in America. Canadian Thanksgiving, I don't know. So every rabbi in America is talking about Thanksgiving. So I asked him, what are you going to say? He was telling me, oh, no. And I said, well, are you going to tell people to eat turkey? He said, why would anybody eat turkey? I said, oh, stop with a cop-out. Everybody turkey. You want to eat turkey, so you have a turkey. Okay, fine. Now, what I would really, though, I would recommend, though, seriously, is not to have a set ceremony that you do every year. Because Rav Moshe was nervous, even in the Shuvas where Rav Moshe is Mekil, Rav Moshe is nervous about setting a new, separate, distinct holiday. So I recommend not having a set ceremony that you do every year about Thanksgiving. And if you want, you know, listen, somebody was lamenting to me earlier this week. Somebody who's new in town, I'm not going to tell you who it is, was lamenting to me that, in past years, they've always had big Thanksgiving things in the communities they were from. Apparently, Thanksgiving was a bigger deal. And here, you know, they felt like Thanksgiving was a lesser deal. And so I said, it's okay, Rabbi Henkin would think that that's a good thing. You take a year off every now and then, Rabbi Henkin would think that that's a good thing, and that's all right. So listen, if you hear somebody says to you that having Thanksgiving and having turkey, don't yell. Don't yell. The Paschal Seder is Soloveitchik, and if somebody says to you, you know, listen, I don't want to have Thanksgiving, I don't think it's so, you know, I don't want to have it, so don't yell. Don't yell. So be machmir like Rav Huttner, maybe like some tshuvas in Rav Moshe. If somebody says to you, I can't believe you're having Thanksgiving, it's chukas akum, don't yell. Don't yell. Just say, Rabbi Soloveitchik thought that it was okay, and it could be in line with the Psak of the Ramah, that it's all right. If somebody says to you, I can't believe you're not having Thanksgiving, well, you're so frumin' and this and that, and that. So don't yell! Don't yell! Just say, it could be in Schukasakum, Rabbi Moshe says, Rabbi Haken says to skip, Rabbi Huttner didn't like it, okay! I don't like turkey anyway, I can go with that. You know, so say, don't fight. Listen, this is the sugya of Schukasakum, it has a lot of ramifications, especially if you accept the approach of Tosis and the Rambam and the Gon, as opposed to the approach of the Ran and probably also the Ravid and probably also the Yerayim and the Psak of the Ramah. And we saw a number of different tshuvas that the Achron want to have specifically about Thanksgiving. One of these days when I start giving the controversial shiurim, so we'll learn about whether having a bat mitzvah or not is considered chukas akum, is a fascinating set of tshuvas Rabbi Chiyo Yaakov Weinberg has. And it's based on the very same analysis that we did today. So in a few years from now, we'll revisit it. We'll learn again the same analysis. Just instead of talking about Thanksgiving, we'll find some other interesting things to talk about. All right, everybody have a great day. Thanks a lot for coming. All right.